Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Put on your thinking caps. Here we go. Gonna probe deep as you let me, and as much as time permits today, into the big C. We're gonna go after cancer. Gonna try to give you a deeper understanding of it. If you're over the age of 60, what are the statistics now? It's like 1 out of 3. Maybe we're gonna hit 1 out of 2. It's not really going down. As the ecosystem demolishes itself, those stats may get worse. There's a lot to learn. So let's see if we can get into some of the misconceptions about it. Let's understand that there's always solution. Definitely prevention. Okay, first order of agenda. Why all the genetic emphasis? The Angelina Jolie thing. The BRCA gene, over a 90% chance of getting breast cancer. Okay, fine, we get it. Here's the perspective. 300 years ago, no one was getting it. Now, we got to take a look at that amidst all the super techno talk. 300 years ago, certainly 400 years ago, definitely 500 years ago, you didn't see cancer. Don't listen to two arguments to that statement. Argument one is, we didn't see cancer because we didn't live long enough. Just look at the numbers. The estimated number is 300 years ago. 300 years ago is not really that long. Just look at the numbers, and it'll tell you that people just didn't live that long. If you take out infant mortality, and you take out maternal mortality, meaning the mother dying at birth or the child dying within the first few years of birth, those numbers changed drastically. There were a lot of old people running around 300 years ago. And we didn't see cancer then. So don't listen to that one. That one that says, well, the only reason cancer wasn't noted 300 years ago is because people didn't live that long. Nonsense. Number two, this idea that everyone got cancer just like they do today, but we just couldn't recognize it. That's also nonsense. And if you go into the social history is different than history. Social history is the day-to-day of life as social historians study it. So what did people eat? What did they drink? What did they wear? How did they talk to each other? We have social historians. If you go into this social history 300 years ago, America, Europe, what you find is that doctors knew what cancer was. When do you think? Take a guess when cancer started to increase in the population. During the Industrial Revolution, if you study social history, we started to see cancer rise. Well, it's only common sense, isn't it, when we started putting up factories? I mean, even at the turn of the century, when we put up factories, those factories allowed kids to work 90-hour weeks. If you were little and you were needed by the family and you had to work in the factory because your immigrant parents didn't have money to send you to school and you just fell into the pot in the factory, well, you lost a kid and that was the end of it. You had 10 more. It was tragic, but life was tough. We had cancer back then. It's in the social historical record. We understood it in 1900. We understood it in 1800. But there weren't a lot of factories in 1800. But there were some. We were starting to mine and do all sorts of things in the 1800s. And this, if you look, is where we started to see the cancer rates go up. Why? because this is our first exposure in history, in human history, to chemicals. So it was there. It was noted. It was written down in the medical journals. Doctors knew what a tumor looked like. In America, in Europe, people did dissections. A tumor is not a difficult thing to see. Externally, if it goes external, and if you cut someone open, as Western history tells us we often did, the evolution of medicine from the 1500s was cutting bodies open. If you cut a body open and it's riddled with tumors, you're going to know something's going on. That word cancer goes way back. What's the point? The point is, today we're being told, now that we've got this outstanding insight into genetics, this case with Angelina Jolie being the most recent, now that we have all of this insight, all of a sudden it's about your genetic predisposition towards it. And yet 300 years ago, we didn't have any. No arguments tended here. Well, what does that mean? What did we just evolve and mutate our genes in the course of 300 years so that 300 years ago we didn't have those genes and now we do? It doesn't work that way. It's nonsense. If you understand cancer historically and you get through some of the nonsense arguments, you can see clearly there's something going on outside our genetics that drives it. End of conversation. That's it. That is it. Now, we can offer up epigenetics. Epigenetics is tricky. Epigenetics is abused by the holistic community. Shame on the holistic community. I didn't say the allopathic community. I said the holistic community, because what they tend to do, the holistic community, is take a concept like epigenetics and twist it to side with their rational view, their argument. And when they twist it, well, then they create falsehood, and then they're attacked for that falsehood. Epigenetics does not mean that every gene outside the mother gene, or every tendency that you have that you can hope to alter through environment, is environmentally controlled. Some epigenes, some satellite genes, some genes that'll turn on or off the gene that will create the cancer, some of those satellite genes are inherited as much as the mother gene. Meaning epigenetics does not mean environmentally controlled. This is how holistic medicine twists the notion. Epigenetics does not mean environmentally controlled. Some epigenes are environmentally controlled. The issue is, which epigene that may switch on or off a mother gene is under the control of an environmental influence that you, as Joe Consumer, can regulate, and which of these epigenes is not? The show I did on Angelina Jolie a few shows back, review that. We really got into that. But we don't even have to talk about epigenetics. In other words, we don't have to tell the allopathic or the scientific community that we've got the safeguard of epigenetics against our genetic tendency to get cancer. Yes, cancer's in the family. Yes, we've clocked cancer back now, three or four generations. Yes, genetic testing tells me I'm going to get it. I've got a higher probability to get it. You don't have to go to the epigenetic argument. You could, but often you'll be incorrect because your epigene specific to that cancer may not be under environmental control. That's a subtlety. You got to get it. Holistic medicine often doesn't. They make fools out of themselves. But here's my point. You don't even have to go there. You simply have to sit back and reflect on our historical reality. We didn't get cancer 300, 400 years ago. It wasn't around. And that simply means we either mutated into a cancer-producing species in the course of 300 years, or most of our cancers in the environment, whether we can prove it epigenetically or not. You see? That's what I want you, Joe Consumer, to understand. And you can put 100 scientists in this room with me right now, And lots of them would say, Medici, that's a crock. That's the nonsense. And they'd have all their explanations and all their points of views and the rest of it. Sorry, gentlemen, common sense prevails. I submit to you, use your common sense. Every bit of everything I have ever studied, I have studied a lot, not everything, but much, comes down to something. In the end, you let it bake in your intuitive faculty where the common sense lives. And if it's not common sense, throw it out. Don't be overly impressed by statistics, by studies, and by science. Use it as a tool, but don't be overimpressed by it. Our perceptions of cancer, why we're getting it, why we didn't get it, why we're going to get it, should be heavily influenced by our common sense. And common sense tells me that if it wasn't around 300 years ago, it's about our environment. Done. Simple, isn't it? Clearly stated. And yet, that's not the prevalent view. Not at all. Well, for you it is. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. We're going to try to give some deeper understanding of cancer, the reality of it, the non-reality of it. Next concept. Cancer is not one thing. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you look at all the cancers, from brain to breast to bone, to cortical bone cancers, to testicular cancer, to ovarian cancer, to cancer of the large intestine, colon cancer. Where's heart cancer? Never heard of heart cancer. I'm sure there's a heart cancer. Have you ever heard of heart cancer? I haven't. Where's the research going into understanding why the heart doesn't get cancer? Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. Okay, I'm giving it away. Coral, aloe, vitamin D. First two people that can figure out why the heart doesn't get cancer. Generally speaking, I'm sure there's an exception. Can anybody figure that out? I'm not even going to tell you for 20 more minutes. So you got loads of time. Get on the website, straighttalk.cc, and that's not .com, two T's, straighttalk.cc. Get on, get into the comments section, and tell me why. There's no heart cancer. But here's the point. No matter what kind of cancer we're talking about, cancer is a cell that starts to replicate. Only it doesn't replicate completely. It replicates partially. So it doesn't differentiate itself into the same cell that it came from. It's an undifferentiated cell. It's only partly replicated. And in that it's partly replicated comes another trait. It just keeps on replicating. Now that's what all cancers are. So you can't say cancer is different from another cancer in that sense. They all share that quality. But the point is that what initiates that state of chaos, unprecedented replication, what initiates that is very variable. Is very variable. Toxic hormones can drive a cancer. Emotions can drive a cancer. Chemical infusions. If you're thinking that the poor woman that suffered so much emotional distress around the issue of men and relationship with men, from the father to the atrocities to this to that, and she manifests ovarian cancer, that's not the same cancer as a woman with ovarian cancer that lived through Chernobyl, or the poor people in Japan that are going to manifest cancers, or Hiroshima, Nagasaki. Those cancers in the ovary are not of the same origin in a sense, right? They both trigger a replication state that goes uncontrolled, thus the tumor, thus the metastasis, but they don't come from the same thing. So in that sense, every cancer is different. And this is what confuses people. It's an oxymoron to say the cure for cancer. There is no cure for cancer. 30 years ago, not too many people in medicine were saying cancer's many different things. They weren't admitting that it was virally driven or hormonally driven. They certainly weren't admitting that it was emotionally driven. Get on Google, psychoneuroimmunology. Get to Google and look up the term psychoneuroimmunology. Of course, get on the website, go to the radio literature section, because I'm going to start pulling the pictures now to explain cancer and perspectives. But look at the term psychoneuroimmunology. We didn't have that word in the medical vocabulary 30 years ago. Because 30 years ago, no one in allopathy, or few people in allopathy, mainstream medicine, would admit to the relationship between emotion and disease. And that is the truth. Even I have been around this game long enough to know when I started, you couldn't really make a claim between emotion and disease until some fine electron, it wasn't the electron microscope. Somebody found a nerve fiber communicating with an immune system cell. Someone found a nerve fiber, a picture of, communicating with the immune system cell. And out of that came, wow, we finally see it now. There's a relationship between the nervous system, which is your emotional system in a sense, and your immune system. And there's a relationship between the immune system and cancer. Psychoneuroimmunology was born out of a picture. We finally did what we always do. And get this straight. You can talk about things. A lot of the things I'm saying today, we can just talk about and we can dispute. You see, there's this phobia against common sense. 100 years ago, before psychoneuroimmunology, we could simply say, well, there's no proof that emotions cause disease, that negative emotions create problems. There's only speculation, and even that's not even rational. See, that? So the argument goes. It went that way with cigarettes, too. Then somebody lands on a picture of a nerve fiber touching an immune system cell, and all the medical community gathers around, everyone claps, and as long as it makes everybody money, we say now we can deliver a service, make a ton of dough, everybody's happy, and we have a new profession, a new area of study. What happened to common sense? Why did we wait a good 40, 50 years before we could unanimously say cigarettes were dangerous and caused cancer? Why did we have medical doctors advertising for them in the 50s? Why did we have all our movie stars smoking them and bragging about the style that they smoked, the brand that they smoked? Where was our respect for common sense? So you see this play itself out now. But we've got it. We've got the technology. So a cancer is emotionally driven. A cancer is bacterially driven. A cancer is virally driven. A cancer is radiation driven. A cancer is driven through toxic hormone. So you have to understand cancer separately. And then you have to understand cancer specific to you. So there's no one cancer. Even though what all cancer has in common is what? Uncontrolled replication. Another thing, another concept, don't say because your mother had breast cancer and your mother's sister had breast cancer and your grandmother had breast cancer and your grandmother's sister had breast cancer that it's genetic. Don't say that. Understand that it can be familial. If everybody lives next to an oil refinery, if 100 years of generations are smack in the middle of 5 oil refineries, or 5 generations of people are smack in the middle of the worst pesticide-ridden farmland in the San Joaquin Valley, if 5 generations are exposed to high concentrations of carcinogens, those generations will have cancer. and they'll often have the same type of cancer because they have the same type of exposure. And so we'll conclude from that that it's genetic. It's not genetic, it's familial. Please get that one straight. That's important in understanding you. You see, because if you're part of that family line and yet you're outside the familial circumstance, if you moved to another state, if you did something else for a living, if your entire family were auto body mechanics, sucking in carcinogenic glues and paints, etc., and you're the one that broke from it and you work for the library system of California, you're out of the familial dome. You got to get that one before you tell yourself that your future is heritably influenced, meaning genetically determined, just because everybody else has a familial issue. So you want to get that difference between genetic and familial. Very important in terms of understanding cancer. So you're holistic, and of course that means you don't believe in any of that chemo stuff, and you don't believe in those tests like mammograms and colonoscopy and this and that and the other thing. Please don't make that mistake. I have been around in the holistic game for a long time. I've seen a lot of things. I think that holistic medicine and its success rate with cancers is very, very poor. Please do not be deceived by nonsense about herbs and all sorts of anti-cancer therapies in the sense. Now, you got to catch this. Again, I work in clinical nutrition, so it's funny I should say that. So I want you to catch the distinctions here. Whether it's herbs or whether it's foods or whether it's lifestyle, there's lots of things that everyone would agree are healthy for you. And to build the reserve of health is to minimize your risk for something like cancer. I think anyone arguing that is a nitwit. So I don't think anyone would argue that to do good things for your health, get your sleep, get your vitamin D, so on and so forth, get your antioxidants from your berries and your fruits and your vegetables, I don't think anyone would argue that that's preventative, but in the sense that it builds your health, and your health is your best protection against any problem, any disease, including cancer. No one's going to argue that. Where it starts to get shady is another distinction. So I want you to get this conceptually, and I can see I needed another two-hour show today. Somebody tell me if we should do these in part one and part two. I tend not to do that. I have lots to say, and I don't ever get it all said in 60 minutes. But here's the thing. There is a distinct difference between mechanisms to prevent a disease and mechanisms to reverse the ongoing disease. Those are two different sciences. There are two different conversations. There are two different mechanisms. You got to get that one straight. Cancer is its own animal. By the time you initiate uncontrolled cell replication in cells that don't even replicate, you understand your brain cells don't replicate. Remember the old thing that they tell you, don't drink because it kills brain cells and your brain cells don't grow back, right? That's true. The inner lining of your digestive tract has cells that are replaced all the time. Your skin has cells that are replaced all the time. Some cells regenerate, other cells don't. All your cells repair. They all break down and repair. And if they break down too much, they signal their own death, apoptosis, and they don't ever come back. So if you drink too much alcohol, finally your liver, the cells, the hepatocytes say, you know, I've had enough work here. I'm just going to go up and smoke, and they die. Now, fortunately for us, the liver cell will regrow. A liver will regrow itself. The skin will regrow itself. A bone, cortical bone, will regrow itself. The marrow will replete itself. But brain cells, kidney cells, heart cells, pancreatic cells, you lose half your pancreas. You lose a big chunk of muscle. A shark bites your muscle off. The muscle doesn't grow back. Your nerve is severed. that nerve doesn't grow back together, not generally. So once you initiate uncontrolled replication of cells that don't normally replicate, you have a whole other issue. Preventing it is one discussion. So you might talk about the anti-cancer effect of doing certain things. You might say cat's claw or olive leaf. You could say that some studies show that it's anti-cancer. You have to qualify that statement. But this is very different. Okay? If you have an herb and that herb stimulates an NK cell or a killer T cell, or that herb stimulates the thymus gland to produce a higher, more active, viable proportion of immune system cells that might go after cancer, you can make the claim, in a sense, that something like cat's claw or raw thymus is going to enhance immunity, like reishi is going to enhance immunity. And indirectly, because it enhances immunity, it's going to go after cancer. You might say that. But that's an indirect statement, and also, and often it's an in vitro statement. It works that way maybe in a test tube, in a petri dish. I'm going to get into that a little more deeply in a moment, because I want you to understand what holistic medicine can offer you as it relates to the cancer, and I want you to be able to distinguish between that and the nonsense. And there's so much nonsense. You know, we knock the FDA and we knock the AMA, and sometimes they're just coming in and saying, look, you guys are just out of your minds. You're making ridiculous claims. Well, you know what? In a sense, thank those agencies for those ridiculous, for limiting some of these ridiculous claims. I've seen a lot of nonsense. And the reason I harp on it is because while holistic medicine offers such essential pearls to health, things that your body can really utilize to prevent disease, to prevent cancers, while your body's so capable of being stimulated, of being put in a place, when we reduce that to perspectives like, oh, take cat's claw because it's an anti-cancer herb and studies show, and those studies are bogus, okay? Weak science, poor science, extrapolations that are very vested. Don't think that the people that sell cat's claw are much different than the pharmaceutical companies that want to sell tamoxifen or some chemo drug, which we have to get to. So let's understand that there's a lot of nonsense about herbs as it relates to cancer, because once cancer started, good luck stopping it with an herb. Good luck. I've never seen it. And I've seen a lot, and I've known a lot, and I've been around long enough to see a lot of people who are very good at what they do in herbal medicine and holistic medicine, good doctors. I don't see them. They're not impressing anybody with their statistics. But we did have people with concepts over the years. If you go to the literature section on the website, I've got the faces of a couple of people that did amazing things. And one person was a man named William Donald Kelly. This is number 15. Picture number 15. You just take your cursor, put it on Curing the Incurable, William Donald Kelly. I want to take a moment here. And if you don't have a computer, or you're not at a computer, get on one eventually and look up the name William Donald Kelly. Because this guy was the real thing. So while I am alerting you, cautioning you, at believing that you're safe or that you have a herbal option if you ever get really sick, while I caution you to believe that, I'm also going to open you up to a guy named William Donald Kelly. William Donald Kelly, this is indisputable. Indisputable. William Donald Kelly was a dentist. William Donald Kelly got pancreatic cancer. Pancreatic cancer is the one where they tell you goodbye. That was the Steve Jobs cancer. Now, I don't mind saying Steve Jobs is sort of a hero to me, personally. I don't understand how I didn't get to know him until he was gone, but that's the way it was. But see a documentary called The Lost Interview. You can get it on Netflix. It's called The Lost Interview on Steve Jobs. If you want to listen to a visionary, if you want to listen to an alchemist, if you want to listen to somebody to distinguish between a computer nerd and a computer hippie, as the interviewer asks him which one he is, if you want to hear somebody's, who in my opinion, perspective on what corporations should do, get Steve Jobs' The Lost Interview. He's about 40 years old, and he's talking about his life. Get that. I bring it up because we lost Steve Jobs because Steve Jobs had pancreatic cancer and did a holistic therapy. That's what he did. And he'd be exactly the kind of guy to do it. So these words today I give to you are not wasted. Steve Jobs had the type of pancreatic cancer. Had he had it surgerized early on, we'd still have Steve Jobs. But he was talked into holistic therapy for his pancreatic cancer by these guys, and it was nonsense. And I've seen it happen hundreds of times. So even a guy like Steve Jobs, even a guy with enough money to buy an entire lab for himself, can be deceived. Let me clarify my statements before you misunderstand me. Let me tell you the story of William Donald Kelly. He had pancreatic cancer. Pancreatic cancer is terminal, normally. It metastasized to his liver, which gives you statistically no chance of survival. He died in his 80s of a broken heart. He lived another 30 years. He cured himself. That is not arguable. That was validated. That was confirmed. That was studied. That was scrutinized. This is no nonsense. William Donald Kelly was a dentist, given a death sentence, and he figured out how to do it. He did. Now, this is when the story gets interesting. There's another guy that I've pictured here, and that's picture number 16, Nicholas Gonzalez, medical doctor. What went wrong? I've been following this guy for a good 20 years now. Nick Gonzalez, he actually comes from the same part of New York City that I do. And he was a medical doctor, still is a medical doctor, out of Cornell. And his specialty was in immunology, which is a darn good place to be if you're going to study oncology, if you're going to study cancer. And while he was a very young man, in collaboration with Robert Good, Dr. Good was the head of the National Cancer Institute. And Nick Gonzalez was sort of a protege of Robert Good. These guys had a connection. It was kind of like a mentorship. So you're talking about an extremely intelligent, educated medical doctor out of Cornell who's specializing in immunology. And Nick Gonzalez hears, now Nick Gonzalez must be about 65 years old. So this is going back a good 25, 30 years, I don't know. Nick Gonzalez hears about this guy, Donald Kelly. And in dialogue with the head of the National Cancer Institute, goes to see and meet William Donald Kelly at his clinic, where Kelly by now is using the therapies that helped him on everybody. So he's got his own clinic. Donald Kelly's treating cancer as a dentist, using food and some nutritional supplementation, his own special way, and we'll get into what he was talking about. And it's curing people. Who says it's curing people? John Q, Mary L, Sister Joe, Brother Tom? No, people with names, first names, last names, addresses, phone numbers, real people that you could talk to, that did the Kelly therapy, that had no cancer 5 years, 10 years later, that were given up for dead. Well, that's hearsay, right? Of course it is. So Donald Kelly meets Nick Gonzalez, and Nick Gonzalez is expecting to find the usual brand of nonsense. Within a year, Nick Gonzalez is back with Dr. Robert Good saying, I want to study with this guy, William Donald Kelly, because I have studied hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pathology reports, and this man is curing cancer. Period. Amen. End of conversation. No exaggerations, no lies, no nothing. Scrutinized by an immunologist out of Cornell in collaboration with the head of the National Cancer Institute. And Gonzalez goes back to Robert Good and says, I got to study with this guy. Now, that's not up for grabs. That's what really happened. There was another guy, Max Gerson. Same thing. He's the medical doctor. Max Gerson never had cancer. If you read that book, Max Gerson, A Cancer Therapy, whatever Gerson was doing, not today perhaps, but whatever he was doing in the 30s and the 40s, Max Gerson cured cancer, terminal cancer. Case study after case study after case study. If you are ever given up for dead by the allopathic community and you go to a holistic model, the first question you need to ask is, what are your statistics? You have to ask that question politely. You have to want to meet people that have been through the therapy. You want to get proof, because if you don't take that step, if you don't scrutinize and study who you're about to pay money to for a holistic therapy in the name of stopping a cancer, you have to go at it like Nick Gonzalez went after it with Donald Kelly. He studied case study after case study. You have to access that. You have to do something like that. Well, when Gerson and Kelly this century were studied, scrutinized, criticized, thrown out of the country, attacked, demonized, when they were studied by very veritable sources, their work came up clean. So let's not think that natural medicine, the ability to change the terrain, the ability to go into the terrain of your body, let's remember that going into the terrain creates an environment that makes it unnecessary for your body to produce cancer. It makes it impossible, or can make it very difficult, for cancer to find a place to metastasize when the terrain fights metastasis. You have to understand that these are options. The problem is the holistic community at large hasn't mastered what this comprises. Well, William Donald Kelly gave it a great shot. His statistics were unbelievable. And of course, there were no promises, nor were there promises with Gerson. But I submit to you on this day that if you study the statistics of both of these gentlemen, they blow anything in holistic medicine away. Honestly, they blow anything in allopathic medicine away. These guys really, really administered therapies that cured it. So they're on the website. Look into that. Today, Nick Gonzalez is on 34th Street and 2nd Avenue in New York City. He can be tough to get in touch with, but look into him. He's made a contribution. Gonzalez mentored with Kelly. So the story goes on that Kelly sort of got older, went a little crazy, sort of like stepped out of it. The pressures. You got to understand, I've seen this across the board. I've seen these people go into the cancer game. When you treat serious disease like that, you've got a 10, 20-year lifespan in it. After that, it fries your nervous system. It did to Gerson. It did to Kelly. It does to lots of people. So understand that after a while, Kelly just, he faded out of it. Enough is enough, they say. Well, Gonzalez mentored with him. He schooled with him. And Gonzalez and Dr. Linda Isaacs are still in practice today. Very devoted people. I don't know if they're having quite as wonderful a result. You have to remember, when you look for therapies, always look for the progenitor, the guy that invents the therapy. Look for that. You're usually going to get a better run for your dollar. But I cite these two. Gerson, of course, passed away a long time ago. His daughter's in her mid-90s. And Gerson, of course, was thrown out of the United States, barred from testimony where over 300 people who had cured late-stage cancer. I mean, Gerson's documentation of his cures, it was precise. It was beyond argument. There's no nonsense with these two. I'll leave you with this on Gerson. Gerson had a notion, the essence, that one of the drivers, two of the drivers on the Gerson therapy was, one, the coffee enema. Wow. Gerson said when people had come to him that had done chemotherapy and his therapy started to dissolve tumors, that the tumors were so toxic that if a person had done chemotherapy, their bile ducts were so fibrosed that unless they had been pumped open with the coffee enemas, just the dissolution of the tumor would kill them. You got to understand that. A person with cancer, if the Lord were to go in there and dissolve that tumor, unless that tumor has a way out of the body, if it sits in the blood as it's been dissolved, it's going to kill the host. Gerson found this to be true. Until Gerson engineered the coffee enema, he took it out of old notes where it was discovered in World War I at the Russian front. It's where the coffee enema was discovered. And what Gerson found is that until people had perfused bile, all his therapies didn't work. That's amazing. The other cornerstone of Gerson therapy was an understanding. And Gonzalez and Kelly also had an understanding in a different way about cancer that I'll talk about. But the Gerson therapy, its cornerstone had a lot to do with, if you look at a cell, and osmosis, so diffusion across the cell membrane, and you're finding that all the sodium is inside the cell and all the potassium is outside the cell, rather than all the potassium inside the cell and all the sodium outside the cell. If you find that the ions, sodium, potassium, are reversed, meaning the sodium is inside the cell, reversed, not enough potassium inside the cell, the cell is vulnerable to cancer. And so the Gerson therapy was get the sodium out, get the potassium in. Simple. Simple but profound. Today, the cornerstone of the Gerson therapy is get the sodium out, get the potassium in. If you could just, with a microscope, go in and look at the cells, those cells aren't going to get cancer as Gerson thought. And he's had all the chemistry behind that. That and the coffee enema drove Gerson therapy. Now, today, down in Mexico, where it has to live because it can't live here, the Gerson therapy has brought in lots of other immunological therapies. And if we have time, we'll talk about Germany. I've got to get a note in about Germany and what they're doing, which is, of course, the birthplace for all this holistic medicine. The Germans are doing, as always, amazing things, and there's a clinic there. H-A-L-L-W-A-N-G. Get to the website, okay, and look at picture number, what is it, number 17. It's going to talk about the Hallwang Clinic, H-A-L-L-W-A-N-G. The Hallwang Clinic is a reputable place in Germany doing things run by oncologists, MDs, who understand cancer. There's no chiropractors there running therapy. This is the medical community in Germany, and they do things that are outstanding, some of which isn't even done in America, believe it or not. Now, the Kelly therapy, what did Donald Kelly do that was different? Well, Donald Kelly found, off the work of a Scottish physician at the turn of the century, Donald Kelly found that protease, pancreatic enzyme, if unused by the body, pancreatic enzyme would circulate freely through the blood and to the organs and would be utilized as protease, so the protease enzyme, to eat tumors. Your digestive enzymes, God gave you digestive enzymes so that when not necessarily needed for digestion, would circulate systemically to eat tumors. And this was done off a Scottish physician whose name I can't remember at the turn of the century. Kelly picked up on it, started synthesizing, putting together, encapsulating pancreatic enzyme. And those pancreatic enzymes, of course, had to be active, viable. Lots of care had to go into the production of it. Nix is what Nick Gonzalez does today. Well, at any rate, when Kelly did it, those pancreatic enzymes, as the Scottish physician saw, as Kelly saw, would go into the body and dissolve tumors. And Kelly would sell these, which didn't make him a friend of the state. So there was much ado about this issue. Finally, Kelly was attacked and defrauded, defrocked, the whole nonsense. Gerson was thrown out of the United States in an absolutely scandalous trial. No justice done whatsoever. Pancreatic enzyme. The pancreas delivers enzyme to the blood. If the enzyme, the digestive enzyme, does not have to be completely utilized, what would that make a case for? If I were to tell you that the pancreatic enzyme, protease in particular, if it's not needed by the digestive tract to digest food, that it would circulate systemically and go after tumors, and that this was the core of Kelly's work. Kelly's work that you can't argue, work that was studied by Nick Gonzalez. Gonzalez being under the hood of Dr. Robert Good, head of the National Cancer Institute. Today, these gentlemen are in practice, Gonzalez is. So we're not talking fairy tales here. What would that circulating enzyme depend on? First person that gets to the website, straighttalk.cc, to tell me what dietary extrapolation, insight, off the back of this statement about if you don't need your protease, if you don't need your pancreatic enzyme being protease, if you don't need it, it'll circulate through the blood and find its own war with your little tumor cells. What dietary recommendation, what way of eating would this make an argument for? Think about it. Someone's proved it already. And what Kelly went on to say, so get to the website, straighttalk.cc, and give it a shot. I'll give the first person that comes in clean on this. So what, in fact, are we saying here? We're saying that at the turn of the century, everybody ate sweetbreads. Sweetbreads. Everyone ate sweetbread. Sweetbread is pancreas. Kelly said that one of the reasons we saw far less cancer historically was because people regularly were loading up on organ meats. Something changed in the American tradition. We've always eaten beef. We've always gone after animal. But we stopped eating organ. And Kelly said it was pancreas. He said it was the availability, the regular practice of eating the sweetbread, the pancreas of the animal, delivering excess protease. That was really one of the safeguards. Very interesting. A lot to think about, but the man backed up his statements. His statistics are awesome. The same with Gerson. Now then we've got our herbalist peddling our anti-cancer therapies. Beware of that. Truly beware. A lot of these studies are done in vitro, In vitro means if you have tumors and you sprinkle Catscala on the tumors in a petri dish and it inhibits the growth of the cancer, well, we can call it an anti-cancer herb. You can't say that. Not ethically speaking, you can't say that. Because in vitro is not in vivo, not in the human body. When you put something down through the gut, you don't know if it's going to get to the site. The site may be walled off. It may be walled off by a ton of fascia, a ton of connective tissue. And in doing so, you remove completely the prospect that the herb, even if it were to do some good, would even ever get to the site. So the Chinese inject the herb into the site. I put a little statement on the site there on Rishi, on number 9, picture number 9. Says what the Chinese know about Rishi that could save lots of people from bad illness. It's an advertisement. You can just get that up on the website. It's picture number 9. But the point is, what Rishi, where? Even if you had a good grade of Rishi, and Rishi's been studied, and it has factions in it, it's got chemical compounds in it that we could say fight cancer in a sense, or stimulate the immune system in a sense, but what the Chinese know about the Rishi mushroom that could save American lives, I think that is a gross exaggeration. I think that even though we have some science behind it, I can guarantee you if you put Rishi into bodies that have cancer, you're not going to see such good results. I will guarantee you that. And that's because you don't know if the Rishi ever gets to the site. So you have to understand there's a difference between preventing something. You might make a strong argument that some of these mushrooms could promote immunity, could stimulate the immune system to make more cells, more viable cells, to go out and eat tumors as cells in your body do. We all know, right? We all know that at least once a day your immune system destroys a cancer cell. We know that. We hear that. There's hard science behind that. The body makes cancer cells all the time. So really now, the issue becomes, and this is where I think Western science is at fault. Once again, we're always studying things after we have the forest fire. Prevent the forest fire. So if in fact you've got one kind of body that keeps swallowing up cancer cells and another one doesn't, what are the differences in those two bodies? This is the way we have to go about cancer. So, wow, lots said today, huh? We really need another hour or two on this. Uncontrolled cell growth. Uncontrolled cell growth as a product of so many factors, radiation, chemicals, emotions, allowing the production of the free radical. What do we mean the free radical? The electron deficient, electron hungry moiety, chemical compound on a seek and destroy mission into and through the membrane of your cell, into your cytoplasm, into your nucleus, into your DNA, and then breaking the twig of sequence in the DNA. And if you get enough of these, your DNA repair systems that are always compensating aren't going to be able to compensate effectively. And finally, you're going to switch the wrong gene on. You're going to have a chemical alteration or a chemical breakdown in the sequence of nucleotide in the DNA, it's going to initiate a cell replication, but a cell replication that's not going to go to the end of replication and stop replication. It's going to be a replication that continues and continues. When it's a benign mutation, it does. That's a benign tumor. When it's a malignant one, and they look at the cells off biopsy, they see these monstrosities of partially evolved cells that are multiplying faster than they mature. And that's initiated in a multitude of ways. That's different than prevention. Again, Kelly, Gerson, prevention. If you have a little tumor, cut it out, please. A breast tumor, get rid of it. Do thermography to track it. But once you have a malignancy, cut it out. If you have a uterine tumor, cut it out. Don't be opposed to surgery. Question chemo, question radiation. Look for statistics that show improvement. If you have statistics, hard statistics that show improvement in lifespan and or quality of life, then sometimes you have to make a very tough decision to be with your family another few years. And it could mean chemo and it could mean radiation. Be objective. Don't be on one side or the other. Do what works. You see, this is where your common sense becomes so important. But if you want to talk holistic medicine, talk prevention. Every single one of my shows, all 115 shows now, are about prevention, about creating a terrain so as not to produce a cancer. And it's reasonable to make that statement, and it's reasonable because it's common sense. Does your bile flow? Do you get enough sleep? Are you in your parasympathetic nervous system? Where are your pHs? What's the ecosystem in your guts? What about the infections in your teeth? Have the muscles been peeled off the bones? Have you cleaned and perfused the bone marrow? Has the mucus in the colon been debrided time and time again in those things we call colon cleanses? Have you reduced or eliminated all your EMF? You see, protection is a health profile. It's a health profile. It's a health profile that you're constantly working on. So once again, it comes down to education. 949-873-2127. 949-873-2127. If you're out there spinning in circles because there's so much nonsense, you give us a call down here. Come on in, and we'll make sense out of you. God bless you. Have a good week. See you next Saturday.
Been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.